Parshat Vayakel is really the culmination, the conclusion, going through all the technicalities that were needed for the building of the Mishkan. Let's take a look at Perek Lamed Vav, chapter 36, where the Chumash tells us, "Bezalel shall carry out with Oliav and every wise-hearted man, within whom Hashem has endowed wisdom and insight to know and to do all the work for the labor of the sanctuary, everything that Hashem has commanded. And Moshe summoned Bezalel, Oliav, and every wise-hearted man, whose heart Hashem endowed with wisdom, everyone whose heart inspired him to approach the work to do it. From Moshe's presence, they took the entire gift that the children of Israel had brought for the work, for the labor of the sanctuary, to do it. But they continued to bring him free-willed gifts morning after morning. All the wise people came, those performing all the sacred work, each of them from his work that they were doing. And here's the key that we're going to be working through in Mirth Hashem today, my friends. And they said to Moshe as follows, the people are bringing more than enough for the labor of the work that Hashem has commanded to perform. Like, enough! We don't need all this material. Moshe commanded that they proclaim throughout the camp, saying, man and woman shall not do more work toward the gift for the sanctuary. And the people were restrained from bringing. But the work had been enough for all the work to do it, and there was extra. Now clearly, even before we begin with the three questions that we're going to ask on these last two psukim, Vav and Zion, it's clear, even in the English, that the word work, melacha, is repeated over and over again. Man and woman shall not do more work toward the gift for the sanctuary, which would seem almost to stop working to build the sanctuary, and the Mefarshim asked this question. But the work had been enough for all the work to do it. Double lashon in our pasuk, in the Hebrew in 6, v'amlacha ita dayam l'chol amlacha l'asoto tava hoter. And as Rashi points out in 3a and 3b, that the first melacha is going on those bringing the work, those who are contributing. So, v'amlacha ita dayam, and those who were involved in the work, which is an interesting phrase, of bringing the gifts, it was enough, l'chol hamlacha, for all those who were involved in the melacha and actually doing the work itself. But the word melacha clearly appears over and over again. Be that as it may, it's clear from the psukim, and this is what we're going to focus in on, that there was just way too much material. Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, stop, don't bring any more, enough is enough. They had to call, you know, like, cease, and the work had been enough for all the work to do it. And there was extra. On this, I'd like to raise, Yirtz Hashem, together, three questions. And again, this is a great opportunity, as we've said many times, to see how, in what seems to be, you know, very nice psukim, but nothing really, you know, wow, that it's really teaching us mamish fundamental ideas in Yiddishkeit. Question number one. Here, the people are motivated. They're bringing day after day. Men and women. The women even came earlier in the morning than the men. They are fire, passion, desiring to bring. So why stop it? The more the merrier. If you have extra, so you'll use it for bedek habayit, you'll use it for, you know, building more things, you'll use it for the treasury. Like, you know, if the people want to give, then don't say stop. Say bring it on. More, more, more. What is this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, stop? And Vayichale, the people were restrained, it's almost like imprisoned. They were stopped from bringing this. So that's our first question I'd like to deal with. How are we to understand, how are we to understand this? Second question is, and this is brought down in source 2, if there was enough, then how was there extra? The work had been enough for all the work to do it, and there was extra. Well, isn't that a contradiction? Isn't enough enough, and extra it's extra? Well, was it enough, or was it extra? And then our final question is, if indeed there was extra, well, what did they do with that extra? And that's why the Ramban says they put it away for future repair work, the Sforno or offers, that that way the artisans didn't have to skimp on the use of materials. But this still remains as a question. If there was extra, what did they do with the extra? So let's begin with each question, looking at, as we saw last time, bullet points of answers and focusing in on one mahalach, one answer on each level. So let's begin with the bullets. The Lamut Tzrach, Source 4, first question. Moshe Lavir Kol Kazeh. Why, what would it matter if we had more? Why was there such a restraining order? So the Shemana Tov, Rav Weinberger from Brooklyn, notes the following. He says, sometimes people just offer and they give because they're imitating their friends. And they're doing it, and it becomes haraka. Well, everyone's giving, let me join the bandwagon and give. Only somebody, and this is not just in the Mishkan, this is in life, only one who has the ability to stop. Only one who has the ability to hold back, who b'emet ba'alim al atzmo, then he's really in charge of himself, and he's not doing it just out of rote and out of habit, but this is something that he has decided to do, and there was intent in doing this. So according to this, why does Moshe Rabbeinu say stop? Because he wants to make sure that the giving of the articles and the giving of all the different materials, gold, silver, etc., wasn't given because, you know, this was the modus operandi of those days. You know, everyone's giving, let me join up. But rather, no. This is a specific time to give. Give because you want to give. And then we're going to hold back from giving to make sure that you understand that the giving has to be a thought-through process and not just imitating those around you. And this is really Musar Haskel for life. How do we really know the greatness of a person? It's not necessarily in the ability to do, it's the ability to withhold. Right? It's not only the ability, Siyag L'Chachma Shtika, and the ability to speak, but really where is the Chacham in his ability to be quiet? The ability to restrain, the ability to hold back, that shows mastery of a person. Right? Anyone can eat. But going on a diet, well, that takes mastery. That's approach one. Approach number two of our second bullet before entering into the main idea on the first question is a beautiful insight of Rav Zaks in Menachem Siyom. He says, unlike the Mikdash, where you were allowed to have, you know, they added extra, you know, kalim and extra beautiful things to beautify the base of Mikdash, the Mishkan was not that way at all. You could only do what the Torah obligated you to do and no more. Why? So there was a practical reason. And that is, the Mikdash, the temple stood in one place, but the Mishkan, they had to carry. And the more materials you add, and the more kalim, and the more vessels you have, the more people have to carry, the more of a schlep it is. And Moshe Rabbeinu did not want that, or Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't want that tircha, that extra burden on Klal Yisrael. So why was it that Moshe Rabbeinu said, stop, would it be nice to have extra material, and you'll use it, you know, in the future whenever you need it, and, you know, you'll cash in? No, because all that extra material had to be schlepped along with the Mishkan, and that would have put the Levim into a much greater stress of making sure that everything was accounted for and somebody carrying everything, and that would have created more than they needed to be involved in. And says Menachem Sion in the asterisk at 5, what a gewaltig lesson we learn. Mizeg Shlomo She'ei l'adam lachmir lachbi b'mitzvot al-chashbonam shel anashim achirim. The lesson we learn from here is it's very nice to have chumros. It's very nice to be more meticulous in your avodas Hashem, but it can't be at the expense of others. Person wants to go above and beyond kesut to hate in the kumam shel mitzvot and va'afrachat avolav. It doesn't be blood for this. But don't do it at the expense of others. And this is, in fact, what the Gemara in Brachos speaks about, that workers who are on a tree are not allowed to get down from the tree to daven a Shemoneh Esrei, even though it would be better for them to daven, you know, standing. The Baal Bayit can go down because it's his, you know, field, it's his time. But the workers, it's not their time, it's somebody else's time. You can't have a better way of davening on the cheshbon to get down from the tree and back up on the tree on the account of somebody else. And I think, my friends, that this is such a powerful idea for us as well. Is that, you know, it's very nice to be mahadar mitzvot. You know, somebody, a man wants to say, you know, Friday night I want to learn an extra hour before Kiddush. Well, that's very nice. that you are so inspired that you want to learn the extra hour, but your family and guests are waiting for that hour to eat. So if it's on the cheshbon of somebody else, so then you have to rethink it. Learn the hour after the meal when, you know, people are you know, ready, eating and you know, go to sleep or moving on with their night, whatever it is. So this is the sensitivity that we need to have. That yes, you want to be mahadir mitzvot, you want to have chumrah, it's gesunta hate. But ask yourself, does this chumrah impact on other people? And how does it impact on other people? And we're not here to weigh down others. We're here to elevate ourselves as well as others. And we have to have that type of sensitivity when we do this. The third bullet, and then we'll begin, is again the Shemin Atov, where he says that there was this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to almost stop them at the moment of zeal and passion in order that Lisha'er Ratzon Lo Stif Yoteru Ashitzariach. You always want to have that added feeling of, oh, I wish I could give more. And that passion has to be continued on. And we'll see this idea at the end a little bit more. We see this, you know, having worked in youth groups for many, many years, they would always tell you that. You know, play a game, and when the game is going great, stop the game. I mean, obviously, the Havdil to the Mishkan. Why? Because then there's that excitement, oh, I want to play this game again. Right? You stop it at the moment of the pitch, of the zeal. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu saw this passion in Klai Yisrael, and he didn't want that passion to die out, so he stopped it right where it was and said, you know, enough is enough, and hold on to that passion, use that zeal, and put it elsewhere. It's this idea of the passion and the zeal that helps us really understand why was it that Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps had the people stop bringing the materials when perhaps, unlike the Menachem Zio, maybe they could have factored used it for the Bedek Abayit, etc. So the Drash Tavi, Rav David Hofstadter, offers an interesting insight. And he notes that our Pasuk forms, when Moshe Rabbeinu made a proclamation saying, people shouldn't bring this anymore. This pasuk forms the basis, even though, as we'll see, it's not the pshat of the pasuk, of the halacha that the Gemara learns out in the Gemara in Shabbos, source 7. Where in the Torah is the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos written, right? We know there are lamedat malachos that are aser, and we learn it out from the different aspects that happen in the Mishkan. Well, where do you have otzah? Where do you have taking in and out on Shabbos? So Rabbi Yochanan said, the Torah states, Moshe issued a command and sent a proclamation throughout the camp. He was telling Jews, do not bring objects back and forth between your private domain and the public domain. I'll just make mention, in Source 13, the Tali Aros, quoting the Nachal Eliyahu on this pasuk of Ish Vishal Yasu Od Melacha L'Truma Sakodesh, that if you take a look at the Tamei Mikra, it really supports this idea of the Munach Revi Zarka, and then Munach Revi, the idea of something which is in the Dalet Amos, and then sending it out, Zarka, and then back Revi Munach, so that it goes into another Dalet Amos, Rosh Hashanah Rabim to Rosh Hashanah Yachi, back and forth. It's hinted at in the Tamei Mikra, which is again the fascination of how much is learned from so many dimensions of the text. But be that as it may, Rav Hofstadter says, going back to 7, the sages of the Gemara derive from this verse that it's prohibited to transport objects from a private domain, such as one's home, to or front yard to the public domain, and vice versa on Shabbos. According to the simple meaning of our verse, however, Moshe was speaking about materials and money contributed for the construction of the Mishkan on any day of the week, not just on Shabbos. And his rationale was that no more material was needed, for enough had already been contributed. His order to refrain from further contributing applied to the other 6 days of the week, just as it did to Shabbos. How then do the sages derive the law of Shabbos from this verse? It seems like don't bring. Don't bring, doesn't matter if it's Wednesday or Thursday, just don't bring anymore. So the Gemara discussing this question points out there's a Gzeirah Shavah going on here. There is a similarity in wording by blowing the shofar, doing the yovel year. And again, this is that key of the word malacha being used here, that we learn that this is taka, one of the lamatet malachos. And that's how we learn it out. But this raises another question. According to the sages, Moshe commanded the people to cease contributing because of the arrival of Shabbos. So why did the verse attributors command to the fact that enough materials have been contributed. If you're telling me that Taka, it's about learning about on Shabbos, you can't transport materials, then just tell me that. Why does the Chumash say, well, the reason you can't bring is because we have enough materials. Say, the reason you can't bring is it's Shabbos. And if indeed that we're not allowed to bring because of Shabbos, so then why couldn't they bring after Shabbos? Why were they prevented from bringing at all? So he says, to answer this question, we have to understand, why did Moshe think that there was too much? In the words of the Urachayim and the Bracken and Nate, what evil could there have been if a treasure trove would have enhanced the splendor of glory of Hashem's house? And it seems, therefore, that there must be something else, much deeper, going on here, that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, stop. When the Chumash tells us because of enough material, Chazal seemed to say because it was Shabbos, but they didn't bring after Shabbos, so what's really going on here? What's really going on here is really the key nekuda here. Says Rav Hofstadter, let's explore the concept of contributions of material from Hashem's viewpoint. Why did the Creator, the Borei Olam, who owns everything, require human beings to donate building materials and volunteer their time and talent for erecting his home? We know, and there's an idea that the third base of Mikdash is going to come down, you know, out of fire from heaven, you know. Like, there are some people, like, every day look up at Har HaBayit, and it's indeed the base of Mikdash there or not, right? It's not something that necessarily we're going to build. So, here too, my friends, Hashem could have told the people, you know what, go to sleep, and tomorrow morning is going to be a big surprise. In the middle of the desert, there's going to be a gorgeous Mishkan, ready-made. Why was it necessary for them to contribute the materials and for them to build it? And, in fact, as we know, that the precious gems that the Kohen Gadol wore, the clouds carried them, and they were released in the manna to the Nesiim. So Hashem, indeed, we see an example, the Medrash tells us, indeed did contribute to the materials. So then why didn't he do it for everything? So for their part, Bnei Yisrael gave their participatory contributions in a very excited way. And this is what Hashem wanted. He desired Bnei Yisrael's participation in the form of their generous contributions. Of course Hashem could have built it, but that's not the point. What Hashem wants, Rachmana Liba Bayi, as we've spoken about so many times, Hashem wants our heart, Hashem wants our passion, Hashem wants that zrizus, that alacrity, that joy, that they came, and the wives came even before the husbands in order to bring. This is what Hashem wanted. As we've established that Bnei Yisrael were commanded to contribute to the construction of Mishkan, because Hashem desires and favors his nation's generosity. The question of why Moshe commanded Bnei Yisrael to stop contributing becomes even more puzzling. So if that's the case, if Hashem wanted our contribution, Hashem wanted our passion and our zeal and our enthusiasm, then why bother stopping? And if you tell me it's about Shabbos, so then bring after Shabbos. What is this whole idea going on? So the answer, he says, we suggest that the contribution of gifts to the Mishkan and the joyous enthusiasm with which they brought attest to the people's high spiritual standing and reveal their innermost will and desire to draw constantly closer to Hashem, which is the very purpose of the mitzvah of contributing to the Mishkan. Moreover, the men's exalted levels displayed by their zeal in bringing their gifts in the early morning, and the women's level is even higher. The joyous and unbridled enthusiasm which Bnei Yisrael contributed to the Mishkan was performed with a tremendous outpouring, continuing intent of love and deep feeling, feelings that display their innermost, deepest desire to give to the Mishkan in a manner and with a fervor that broke through all boundaries. However, once Shabbat had arrived and they were forced to stop giving, there was no reason to resume once again after Shabbat. Thus, when the Torah tells us the people are bringing much more than is needed for the job, that was not the reason for which they stopped giving. That was the reason they did not once again resume giving after Shabbos. They stopped giving, however, because of the prohibition of Shabbos. Nevertheless, they did not need to resume giving after Shabbos, because the manner in which they displayed the depth of their passion and zeal before Shabbos was sufficient testimony to Bnei Yisrael's unbridled love. And this, my friends, is the key that's going on here. What Hashem wanted to see from the children of Israel was that passion, was that desire, was that love. Why was it stopped? Because on Shabbos you can't transport material. Why wasn't it continued? Because what Hashem saw was what he needed to see. He was seeing, was there that love? Was there that generosity? And in fact, Chazal tell us that there was so much excitement that the people encouraged each other to bring. There was a momentum going on here. Everyone wanted to be involved in this project. And this is really the yesod. This is the foundation on how we need to serve Hashem. 11. We can understand that our obligation to fulfill Hashem's will demands generosity of heart, zrizus, enthusiasm, and alacrity, joy, and striving to draw nearer to Hashem. We see that our divine service must be performed without hesitation, without delay. It must be formed in a manner that breaches the binding constraints of our physicality, which by their very nature interfere with and block the spiritual longings of our souls. The Vayechaleh, they had to be held back. They were bursting. A person, says Masil Sishar in chapter 7, whose soul burns with passion to fulfill his obligation to his Creator, certainly will not tarry or procrastinate performing his mitzvos. Rather, his movements will be the movements of the flashing fire. He will neither rest nor relax until he has brought the matter at hand to completion. This burning desire in 12 and alacrity is extremely important and beloved to Hashem. Even if there is no more need for that zrizos, it should not be curtailed because there's an independent overriding reason to cease. For the zrizus itself is the goal and purpose of the divine service. Nevertheless, if there's a compelling situation or halacha that demands an end to the zrizus, then it has to be stopped at the peak of its flame, and that's when people stop bringing. They were constrained from bringing. But you know what, my friends, and this is the key. The zrizus itself is the goal and purpose of the divine service. Our question that we had asked, my friends, was, is it not better to have a lot of material? Is it not better to have, you know, stuff in the storage box that you can use, you know, to make corrections or have extra gold on hand for whatever you need? And that's missing the boat. It's missing the point. The bringing of the material wasn't in order to have material. That's not the point. I mean, it's nice. But the goal of the bringing, what Hashem wanted us to bring, was for our passion and enthusiasm. Once the passion and enthusiasm was shown, once it was so clear that this is from where the Beis Hamikdash, the material is being brought, at that point, once Shabbos comes, and there's an overriding reason to stop the zealousy, it's no need to continue it. We don't need to have more. Because what we needed was passion and zealousy. And once that was shown, then we have more than enough for the building of the Mishkan. It was enough as well as it was extra, because this was something, as we'll see, that was going to fuel the Jewish people's relationship with Hashem in the future as well. And that is the key. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu take more things? Because he didn't need the more things. What he needed was the process to get to those more things. And so often in life, my friends, we think we learn two very important ideas. One, so often in life we're so focused on the goal, we're so focused on the end result, that we don't think about process. We don't realize how important process is. And here we see that the process itself is what was so beloved to Hashem, the passion in the bringing it, not just, you know, to see the end column of how much was brought. And we need to recognize this, that we may not, you know, reach the ultimate goal in our lives, but the process and having and trying to reach it is so fundamental. And two, the whole Mishkan, as well as the Beis Hamikdash, as well, my friends, as our Mikdash Ma'at, our mini sanctuary, has to be built on process and not only on result. It's not just about having a gorgeous home with the finest kiddush cups made of silver and the finest silver menorahs. That's beautiful. That's hiddur mitzvah. It's noi mitzvah. It's beautiful. But you want to know what's even more valuable and more precious to Hashem? It's the process itself. Is there passion in this bias? Is there love in this house? Is there enthusiasm in this house? As one of my favorite pieces we've done a number of times, in Sefer Chinuch Ol Miriam Rav Pinkus speaks about that the whole Mishkan was predicated in 15 on Tocho Ratzuf Ahava Bibnot Yerushalayim. Yes, it had the outer of the gold and silver, but it pulsated with love. The first thing we teach a child in 14 is to give a kiss to the sitter, a kiss to the mezuzah, before he speaks. It's all about love. And he says, when a person, you know, mutters a bracha before drinking, the problem isn't just in the bracha. The problem is in the relationship. Hachisaroni b'shayichud b'kirvah ba'ava. We're lacking this feeling of love toward Hashem, this connection to Hashem. That passion, that enthusiasm, that they had to be held back, has to be part and parcel of our building of our homes. It's not just about how much do we have in our home. Well, I have, you know, 7 Kiddush cups. I have 17 Kiddush cups. I have enough Kiddush cups for an army to come to my house. You're almost like Uncle Moshe, you know. The whole kid and caboodle comes in, hundreds of people. I have enough for all of them. That's not what we're talking about. It's beautiful to have as many, and I'm using Kiddush cups as a model, of as many as you need. But even more important is what's behind the Kiddush cup. What's behind the Kiddush? What's behind the relationship? Where's that passion? So my friends, that's idea number one. Again, just to summarize one, why is he stopping them? Bring more. Isn't the more the merrier? So the answer is, there's a koach to be able to stop. There's that strength to be able to stop too. He didn't want to overburden the Levim. You don't have a chumrah on someone else's account. And three, the process itself was even more important than how much was there, and how much was brought. And it was stopped because of Shabbos. Shabbos was a limitation. A lot of Sfarim talk about how you learn the halachas of Shabbos from here, which is, again, not our focus because it's not a halachic shir. And why is it called the malacha, etc.? Again, not our focus. But the idea here, if it wasn't for Shabbos, it would have continued just to see this passion and enthusiasm. But once Shabbos came, and there was really no more technical need for more material, the goal really was reached when this passion and enthusiasm was demonstrated to this extent. And the lesson for our lives, invest in the process. It's not in the result only. It's not in just driving somebody and giving them a ride. It's how you smile. How do you give tzedakah? How do you relate to people? The process itself is just as important, if not more important, than the amount of money that you give in tzedakah. Okay, now let's ask our second question. Was there enough or was there extra? The Rechaim HaKadosh notes, source 16, the apparent contradiction in the above verse. First, we are told that bringing the material was dayam, was enough, implying the people brought whatever was necessary to build the Mishkan, but not more than that. Then the verse concludes with vehoter, and more than enough. In the Arachayim HaKadosh's words, if it was enough, it was not extra. If it was extra, it was not enough. Which one was it? So again, in this question, was it exactly what they needed, or was it extra? It can't be you have exactly what you need and then extra, because extra means that you have more than you need. Then it's not what you need, it's extra. So again, there are many, many mefarshim that deal with this question. And this is part of the challenge of giving a shiur, of, you know, picking and choosing, which is so hard to do, on what to offer. So just to give a taste before focusing in on the Orchaim HaKadosh answer himself, just to give a taste, I'd like to again bullet two answers, like the first level we bulleted. The Tova Pnimim points out that Zohar HaKadosh should lo kol ha-notnim zachu sha-mishkan yibaneh min yitvatam, u-mishalo ra'ui lo zeh nisharan yitvato. Not everyone came with the perfect intentions of L'shem Shamayim. So those who did, they were worthy that, you know, from their gold and silver was built, the, you know, on the higher levels, the Aron. And that's what it means that the Medrash says that they had this inner wisdom. They knew the Kavanos in the people giving it, and they knew exactly in which part. Should this gold go into the Menorah? Should this go into the Aron? Should this go into the silver, into the Adonim? So the Malacha Haita Dayam, it was enough for those who had the right kavanas, the hoter, what was left over? What was left over were the people who weren't on that level of pure kavanas, and that was the material that was left over. So they picked up every material, and they almost felt that energy. Oh, this goes here. Oh, that goes here. Oh, that wasn't with the same shemayim. Let's put it on the side. That is dayam. What was needed was enough in terms of the kavanas. What was extra was the wasn't the right kavanas. That's one approach. Another approach, which a number of mefarshim bring, which we'll see, Rav Munk in 18, if they had brought just enough, then each person might have been tempted to arrogantly assume that his contribution was the one which brought the Shechina to dwell amid the people. It was to eliminate such selfish speculation that a surplus was necessary. And this, Rav Druk continues in Source 19, saying, if everyone was exactly used, then everyone can say, have this gaiva, who's me, I brought down the Shechina. Hotair, but if there was left over, no one knew whose was left over, so no one could have this gaiva. He may think, maybe it was Michael that was left out. And therefore, it was, it was exactly what was needed for the Mishkan, because it was exactly what was needed for the Mishkan and left over. Because what was needed for the Mishkan, that something should be left over. What was needed for the Mishkan was a surplus. So that nobody should think, it was what I gave that I am so important and I am so great. Because as Avi Yesharim points out, that God says, one who is hoarding, you and I can't live in the same world. Beit Hashem chayav li'o mesulak ma'ani. The Beit Hashem has to be completely devoid of the ego of the I. Nothing of it can be found. So again, the pasuk would mean the following: the malacha was exactly what was needed. What was needed? The hotair, that there should be extra, because when there's extra, there's always that, you know, niggling thought in a person's mind. Not sure I was worthy or not. I'm not sure I was on that level or not. And that brings the person to a level of humility. And that is what was necessary in order to build the Mishkan. Not just there's resus or alacrity, but a sense of humility as well. And as Rabbi Pliskin brings down in consulting the wise, what should a person who gives financial assistance to someone else, what should their mental attitude be? He quotes Rav Chaim Zaitchik, who says, realize that the money you're giving is not really yours. The money truly belongs to the person to whom you are giving it. The Almighty has made you his messenger to collect that money and give it to its rightful owner. When you internalize this awareness, you'll be free from feelings of arrogance and conceit. And that's how we have to do all of our avodas Hashem. Oh, am I so great? Look, I've given money to this person. No, it's not about me. My money is Hashem's money. What I have belongs to Hashem. This type of humility is needed in one's avodas Hashem. So those are the bulleted points. What happened? How do we understand this? So again, it was left over those who didn't have good kavana. It was specifically left over. That's what was needed in order to create humility among the people. The Rechaim HaKadosh takes a totally different answer, and it's this answer that I'd like to again focus in on, like we focused in on one idea on the first level. The Manchester Rav in Inspiration and Insight quotes it in English and then adds, 22, perhaps the Torah is informing us of how beloved the children of Israel were in the eyes of the Omnipresent. Because they brought more than was necessary, Hashem therefore concerned himself with the honor of each individual, troubled himself to bring something, and ensured that everything was included in the construction of the Mishkan. This is the intent of the verse and the work through which Hashem commanded that the Mishkan be built, suffice, Dayam, to encompass all that the children of Israel brought, even though it was more than was necessary, Voltaire. Somehow it all fit in. Through a miracle, the receptacle was able to receive more than it could actually contain. So even though, you know, X amount of gold was needed for the menorah, somehow more gold was used and it weighed the same. And that was, you know, above the natural order. Why was this so? Two factors contributed to the people's meriting this miracle. One, their giving of their own valuable possessions for the construction of the Mishkan and its vessels, says the Manchester Rav, and was done purely l'shem shemayim. And the second is, this rizus, this alacrity that we spoke about before. This idea of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that it was more than they needed, the hoter, but dayam, everything was used. And this was a miracle, that no, nothing was left over. Every single thing, every gold, every silver, everything was used. This miracle happened in order to teach us a very, very important lesson. And it's this lesson that I'd like to try to explore together now, Mirtz Hashem, in the writings of the Mishkat Shemen Rav Kaufman from Gateshead. He says in 23 in the asterisk, V'alderech havodah shar lana lomod mizeh chizuka dovat. So we can learn something tremendous from this. Shetzariya kol ish v'bnei Yisrael ladat. We need to know. Shekol ma'amat shu mitameitz b'kiyum hatara v'chol yikiyah shu migageya b'avodas ha'boreh. Every amount of effort, everything that we dedicate in serving Hashem, hakol oleh lifnei Hashem u'mitkabel l'nacha ruach lefanav, everything is accepted by Hashem. And even when you don't see at first glance how whatever you're doing is creating anything, and it's as if you're working, you know, larik v'lo toela, what's the point of me doing this? Lo talel dato machsheve pigu. Don't think this way, that the work is miyuteret lefanav yisparach. But no, that Hashem is choshesh. He is careful for the kavod of all of our work, even the smallest amount, and everything is accepted benachat ruach. The fact that Hashem took all of our contributions, whether they were big contributions or little ones, nothing was left to the side. Nothing was in the, you know, surplus pile. Everything was used. Is teaching us that everything that we do in our Avodas Hashem is beloved to Hashem. Nothing goes wasted. Nothing goes unnoticed. Hashem accepts it all, big or small. And that's the idea of Echad HaMarbe VeEchad HaMamid U'Bavad Shichavein Libo L'Shamayim. That it doesn't matter if you have a lot or a little. It matters what your attitude is. And that's why the Torah compares the korban of a very wealthy person who brings an ox with the sacrifice of a poor person who brings a mincha. Doesn't matter. They're both beloved to Hashem. They're both mitkabela b'ratzon l'reach nichoach, because it is about your mindset. Umiseh 25, yikach kol ish Yisrael chizuk me'alya. This is so important for us. Shelo luzalza b'shum pula tova shu'oseh. Don't ever make fun of, don't ever minimize anything that you do and say, oh, what is the difference going to make? But no, everything that a person does has impact. And it gives a great example of this, and I think all of us can appreciate this. Let's say there is somebody's collecting stuff in a community, lo aleinu, you know, somebody dies in a family and they need to collect money for them, or in any, you know, a kala, you know, one of a yosoma, an orphan's getting married, doesn't matter, right? Pick any stucca you want. Choose a stucca. So, let's say they need $10,000. You know, kid needs an operation, lo aleinu, whatever. They're collecting money for it. So you say, $10,000, you know what, go to 10 people, let each one give $1,000. You know, if I give $5, what is my $5 going to help this $10,000 call? It's like, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. That's what we say. So they say, you know, they don't want my $5. You know, when you get all this stucco mail, like, or people, like, you know, what difference is my little contribution going to make? And the answer is no. The chos chumu ad bioter, the arrow and dot in 25, everything that a person gives, mevi lebesof lasagar haschum akolo kulo, is ultimately going to add up to this goal. And especially, you can't say, you know, what difference does it make to God if I give? Whatever you give to God, based on where you are holding, that is what is beloved to Hashem. Hashem accepted the gold from the rich, like the material from the poor, in the same Mishkan. It was used to elevate God's presence in this world. Wherever you are, you have the ability to create this godliness in this world. And that's why he says by Limud Torah 27, Hashem doesn't count how many pages of Gemara you learn, not how many hours that you've, you know, learned. The tefiyah is, have you learned according to your ability? Have you used every moment according to your ability? And this is what is so beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that a person is able to take what they have and be able to give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the best of their ability. Everything is beloved to Hashem. Second, as the Manchester Rav notes, an act that is performed L'Shem Shamayim is never forgotten above. So the first thing is, it doesn't matter big or small, $5 or $5,000, of course it matters. Don't get me wrong. And a person has to give what they're able to give. But don't say, my small act, my small bracha, my small chesed, it's not going to make a difference in the world. Who really cares? No.
Every small contribution was viewed as important, Hashem cares. And not only that, it's never forgotten. It can be performed in the utmost secrecy without another soul knowing what has transpired. Whatever the case, it is taken note and recorded in heaven, and its rewards are everlasting. There are times when years, even generations, can pass before the reward for such a deed is realized. And you see this by Bezalel, who was chosen as we began our shiur today. Who was Bezalel? His grandfather was Chur, who was Moser Nefesh, who died trying to prevent the people from, in the story of the Chet Egel. He is rewarded by having a grandson who was in charge of building the Mishkan. All this, 30, should serve as a source of inspiration to those who battle the Yitzhahara, striving and struggling to refine their midos, subjugate their desires to become better servants of Hashem. People often anticipate an almost tangible spiritual uplift as a result of such efforts. When divine inspiration is not forthcoming, they become disappointed and frustrated. There's no reason for such despair. For no effort that is expended, l'shem shemayim, for the sake of God, is ever for naught. The most minuscule deed, verbal expression, or thought that is directed toward self-improvement does not go unnoticed. Though decades or even centuries may pass without giving act having borne fruit, one can rest assured it will bear fruit at some point in time. And the converse is also true as well. And this, the Mishkat Shemin picks up by saying, we have to realize that there is an idea of Zorea Tzedakot Matzmiach Yeshuot. You plant, and the harvesting and the good will come at the right time. And this is what you see here, 32. Kiarei kach anarim efurish b'nidivat ha-mishkan, shal pi ha-emes lo hayta shum tuela b'trumat ha-mutarot. You're right. They didn't need all those extra things, and they could have built it without it. But Hashem did this miracle to teach us. Shagam ha-maaseh shel fi ra'ot ha-ayin ein bo tuelet. Even if you don't think anything's going to come of it, you can't diminish its good, and you have to realize that even the smallest thing, the greatest thing can come from it. And no, sometimes even the smallest thing specifically, which seems to us that doesn't have anything, you know, valuable in it, from this can come the greatest Kiddush Hashem, and from this can come the greatest Chashivos. And that's why a person should never say to themselves, well, I don't see any result of what I've done. Well, why bother doing this? You know, does God really care if I do this? Recognize that every act we do is subsumed in that Mishkan. Could you tell where went here or went there? No. You don't know how and where the material you gave went in the Mishkan, but it was all used. Whatever we do is used. It's developed. Maybe let me share a story to bring this into a little bit more concrete level of English. A story that somebody told me many years ago of a mashulach that came to a certain gvir's house. And, you know, he had, you know, long coat and beard and with an attaché case. And, you know, he looked like somebody who's collecting money, if you have that image in your head. And the Baal Bayit opens the door and he sees this person and he says, wait one moment, I'll get you money. And the guy says, I'm not here to collect money. Well, that's a new line. You know, like, try that. I'm not here to collect money. Well, just come in. What are you here for? He says, I'm here to say thank you. Well, that's really a new line. You're here to say thank you? Like, he's wondering, like, this is really bizarre. So he says, would you mind if I come in and share with you a story? So the Baal Bayit, the person in the house, said, sure, come in. So he comes down, sits down, gives him a drink of water. He says, I want to tell you a story. Okay. So this Meshulach from Eretz Israel begins his story. He says, many, many years ago, there was a teenage boy who was drifting, as many teenagers do, wasn't finding himself, didn't know really where he was going in life, what he should do, finished high school, didn't know really he should go to college, go get a job. He was like, you know, in a real state of finding himself. And this teenage boy would sit in the park for hours on end feeding the pigeons, right? That's what he would do. In today's day and age, you could tell how many years ago the story is. He'd be on his iPhone texting and, you know, doing computer games. So this was way before all of this technology, the story, when people still fed pigeons, okay? So he said, so this boy was sitting in the park feeding pigeons, and he would do that for hours. And one day, his eye caught a baseball game that was going on. There were some Frum kids playing ball in the park. And he was starting to watch the game. And it was like a really exciting game, ball game, where I don't know if the ties were scored, and this was like, the height of the game, ninth inning, two outs, that type of thing. And he says, as I'm watching this game and it's like heating up, I see one boy, running off the field, leaving the game. So as he passed by me, it was like this 10-year-old boy, 11-year-old boy, I said to him, how could you leave the game now? Like, this is the most exciting part of the game. Like, what are you doing? So the boy said, yes, it is the exciting part of the game, but it's time to daven mincha. I'm in shorts. I want to change into long pants. I want to go to shul to daven. So I'm leaving the game to go to shul. And the boy, explained to this teenager, davening, etc. He was Jewish, but, it's limited in what he knew. And the boy said to him, what's your name? Where do you live? And he gave, shared information with him. And that was the end of this interaction. So this, the shulah says, now let me tell you what happened afterwards. This teenage boy, feeding the pigeons, watching the ball game, said to himself, here's a 11-year-old boy who is ready to leave the middle of a heated ball game because something means more to him. There's something of a greater value called davening to Hashem. What is this about? What is this relationship to Hashem that a boy can stop? Right, talking about being able to stop, that's greatness. Stop this ball game. And he said that teenage boy decided to look into what Judaism is, enrolled in one of these Baal Tshuva yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, and he says this boy never left. This boy became a Rosh Yeshiva himself, and is teaching Kinder Lech Torah. He says, I am that boy. And I have took down your name and address all these years ago, and I went to find you now to be able to say thank you. I'm saying thank you on behalf of me and my large family. Thank you on behalf of all those Kinder Lech that I teach in Cheder. Because of you leaving that ball game, so many lives have changed. Now, this is a perfect example. Did that boy think, when he had this conversation with this teenage kid, that he would be changing hundreds of thousands of people's lives? No. He was going to daven mincha. No act that we do goes unnoticed. We plant, but we have no idea of how the harvesting is happening. As the Sfasema says in the Da'at in 33, Yizkor kol minchosecha v'loschad yidashna selah. Hashem remembers every gift that we do, everything good that we do. And the goodness that we do is emblazed in history forever. And again, you may not see this here and now. In this case, it was 30 years later. It may be 50 years later, maybe 100 years later. But every good act, everything goes unnoticed. Everything was part of the Mishkan. And we'll just end this idea. The Mishkan Shemin says this is also true by Tefillah. Don't think that any prayer goes unnoticed. You're right. There's sometimes, and he gives the example of Avraham Avinu, who davens for stone, that stone should be destroyed. And he gets up the next day, and he sees, 50 people, 40 people, 10 people. Hashem says, not even 10 people, what could he do? He goes back the next day, he gets up again and davens. Right? Vayashkem Avraham Avokim. And he looks out and he sees that the entire plane is full of smoke. He's davening the next day, even though he sees that his tefillah literally has gone up in smoke. But we know who is saved from his tefillah? Lot. And from Lot comes, we know, Amon and Moab, who comes Rut, who comes Melech HaMashiach. We can't even understand how, even though in our mind, our tefillah is going up in smoke, it's not being answered, Melech HaMashiach is being born at that very moment. Redemption is coming. And that's how we have to understand that even if in our mind, in our eyes, we don't see things in the here and now, it is part of those materials. It was miraculous. It became, part of. We may not see it, but recognize that it's there. Recognize that it has an impact. And therefore, 36, the asterisk, Mutalachov rak lasoda da sherbea deinu laso bekima taro shmir samitzot. We have to do what we have to do and recognize that Minat Shemayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes down everything is written in the Sefer Sikaru Lifnei Hashem. Hashem writes everything down, and nothing It's for Todd. Okay, my friends, so what we've seen so far today are two incredible Yasodas before we move to level 3 in the time remaining. One is, wouldn't it have been better to have more things? And the answer is no, because it was the process itself. Work on that passion. It's not just to have a beautiful home. Where's the passion in the home? Where's the enthusiasm? Where's the love? Aspect number two, was it enough or was it more than enough? It was more than enough, but Hashem made it enough. Because everything that we do is beloved to Hashem. And we shouldn't think that whatever we do is extra. Hashem didn't need that. He didn't need that tefillah. He doesn't pay attention to me. No. Hashem pays attention to every single thing we do, and nothing goes unnoticed. No tefillah goes unnoticed. No act goes unnoticed. But smiach yeshuos. We are zorei stokos. Hashem's smiach yeshuos. We plant righteousness, and Hashem allows them to harvest to its fullest extent. And we have to be aware of that. And we have to lead a life with that recognition and with that sensitivity. Our final idea for today, my friends. If you don't hold like the Rechaim HaKadosh, if you indeed hold, it was Dayam, it was enough, but Vehoter, there was extra, what did they do with the extra? Again, not like the Rechaim HaKadosh. So the Midrash 37 says, Amar le Moshe le Kadosh Baruch Hu, Asinu Melech and a Mishkan, we built the Mishkan, Vehotarnu, things were left over. Ma nase benotar, what should we do with the extra? Amar lo, so Hashem said to Moshe, Lech vase behem Mishkan le'idut, make a Mishkan of testimony. And the first he asks, where do you find another Mishkan called Mishkan Eidos? There's only one Mishkan. So on this, the Mayan Beit HaShreva notes that the Mishkan Eidos is referring to the Luchos HaEidos, the tablets of testimony that were found in the Mishkan. And here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Moshe Rabbeinu that when it comes to Avodah, to Tefillah, there are designated times, right? Dayam, there are times to daven, there's, you know, formula. But when it comes to the Mishkan HaEidos, when it comes to Torah, and Vehoter and Torah are the same letters, as far as I point out, then it's Miniyam, there is no limit. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Moshe Rabbeinu, what should you do with the extra? Invest in not only the Tefillah aspect of the Mishkan, but the Torah aspect of the Mishkan. With that extra, focus in on recognizing that Torah, there's never enough. Torah, you can always learn more and more and more, and that the Mishkan shouldn't only be a place of Torah, of Avodah, it should also be a place and a wellspring of Torah. And hence we know the Mishkan HaGassi, where the Sanhedrin sat, was indeed by the base of Mikdash. Slightly different is the Rabbuna Miptitzcha in the Sefer Kol Mevaser, who says the following. Again, asks the question, Ma nase benotar 39, v'chol mefarshim nitkashu b'zeh, v'alseh b'hem mishkan la'edus, and he says, Sheyesh b'nei adam sha'af achar kol nehanadavah. There are people, even after they've contributed, libam bo'er lasot ol, they want to do even more, even though they've done what they've could. And that's like the Mishkan. It was enough, the Hoter. The Tosefet HaNavah, the desire for more, was so beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what he says. Lech v'aseh b'hem Mishkan la'edus, b'hem daika. Which means, as he notes in Source 40, quoting here the Sfasemes, the Chidushei Arim, that from what should you build? Build from that which is extra. The desire for Doros, build within them that continuous desire, that even when there is no Mikdash, nevertheless, Klai Yisrael should desire to continue to give. What is the Mishkan HaEidot build in them? Build in the people. That even when, although now there's enough material, but they have such a desire to give more that you have to hold them back, build in them the system that desire is so important in the people. This is what is so beloved to Hashem. It's not just what you have given, but your desire to, I want to give more. And that create as almost an institution within them that they should always be people, adore doros, who continue to give. As Rabbunim says, on Habocher B'Shirei Zimra, Hashem who chooses the songs of the singing. Shirei could be shirayim, the leftovers of the song, which means that after I sing, I want to sing more. And that's what Hashem is bocher. That's what Hashem chooses. As we say, v'sirei izim naseh beratzon, u'bavadah bein amikdashenu nismach kulanu. Naseh beratzon means with a ratzon itself, even when there's no base amikdash, that desire is like a korban. And that's the hoter, that the nishar haratzon letamid. What is left over? The desire. And that desire should be a mishkan ha'edus, should be in them a testimony of their deep desire to give, how they weren't able to give now, but that deep desire should continue for generations. As a Divrei Yisrael, the Rebbe of Majid says, that's the Malachet Hava. That's what Rashi means when we begin with, that Malacha refers to giving. There's a Malacha, there's an act of desiring to give. And even though they couldn't do that act anymore, that Tshuka and Ratzon to give in the Aztecs in 41 should be for Dore Doros. That's the Hoter. That is, has to be kept. Keep that desire locked up within you. Allow that desire to bring, he says, V'hoter od laniach bracha el toch bateyem, shetishra shchina gam maseyetem v'ateyem. Allow that desire to affect their homes, that they're going to continue to bring down the shchina and that close relationship in their home. In simple English, what happened with the extras? So you're right. The classic commentators, the Ramban, the Sforno, it was used to the best of their ability. It was used for Bedek HaBayit. It was used for whatever was needed, granted. But on a deeper level, what is symbolically, what was done with that which was left over? It was almost encased in this Mishkan HaEdot, not in a physical building, but in each and every one of us. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, I want you to hold on to this. You're the Mishkan HaEdot. You are the Ark of Testimony. And you bear testimony to this fact of how you desired so deeply to give. And this is something that's transmitted me door to door from generation to generation. Habocher v'shirei zimra v'shayrei zimra. That even after you sing, you want to sing more. You want to give more. You want to even do more. That quality that Klal Yisrael have to be tomchei Torah, to support Torah institutions, to help other people out, to continue to help. That is what came from the leftover. That is what brought the bracha into people's home. You know, it's interesting, as the Zkeni Mizbonah, quoting the Rav Moshe, points out, that the way Moshe Rabbeinu really, if you look at the language in the Chumash, he told them to stop ringing. The language in the Chumash is to stop doing the malacha. He didn't say stop doing. Al yaviu od malacha. It should have been stop ringing the trumos, the donations. And he says the following. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to quell this passion that they had. So he doesn't say stop ringing. He says rather, we don't need any more malacha. We don't need any work done. And they'll figure out, well, if there's no more work to be done, al yasuon malacha, then enav shurut yoter lasoma mele yavinu shing gam ein makom lafei. If he tells the people there's no more work to be done, the people say, oh, if no more work to be done, we don't need to bring more materials. But he said it in this way because he wanted to keep this enthusiasm going, because he wanted this enthusiasm to be for Dore Doros. And we'll just add parenthetically here, the Emes Liyaku of Kamenetsky notes that originally, this Mishkan was going to be around only for a short time, a few months, because they were supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael right away. It wasn't going to be their permanent structure. But nevertheless, they showed this passion, they showed this enthusiasm, even if it's going to be for a short-lived amount of time. Nonetheless, if we have the ability to connect to Hashem, that is the greatest pleasure. That's v'hoter. That passion that's left over is that passion which we, reading the Chumash, reading the Parsha, have to almost take from the Chumash and integrate, inculcate within us, inject within us, that we feel this passion. And that's what we have to teach our children. Talk about pleasure. What do you enjoy more? Helping your friends with Ramat Shafiyah Solomon with hearts full of love, pass the test, or a bowl of chocolate ice cream? reinforce this lesson again and again, that the ice cream is a fleeting moment of illusion, and chesed, it's a real profound pleasure. And when you teach him about learning Torah and doing mitzvot in 45 and ma'asim tovim, help him to see that these are the sources of the greatest pleasure a human being can do. Don't do mitzvot just for the reward, then you're conditioning him to seek reward. Show them instead that a mitzvah is its own reward, that there's a profound pleasure to be derived from drawing closer to Baruch Shalom and emulating his ways. Teach your children that these are the only true source of real and lasting pleasure for a person in this world. If you share with them your own strong pleasure and desire for the mitzvahs themselves, you can be rest assured that your children shall be the mighty of the earth. And therefore, my friends, what we've seen today, which seems like such a simple section, it's so fundamental. The three major points, although we saw a lot. One, process itself is so important. That passion, that enthusiasm has to be there when we build our own homes. And it's that, even more so than what is found in the home, that is so significant. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu only stopped them, because Shabbos was coming, and they had shown and demonstrated this love. It wasn't about more material. Item number two, was it enough or was it extra? The answer the Or Chaim HaKadosh gives is, it was enough, even though it was extra, because Hashem miraculously included everything to teach us no act, no deed, no tefillah goes unnoticed. Everything is part of this larger structure of the Mishkan, and we have to pay attention to each and everything we do and realize it's beloved to Hashem and brings nachat ruach to Hashem, even if it's the smallest thing, it's a thread of purple. Like, what difference does it make? It has a tremendous impact. And finally, when we're building this Mishkan, recognize what was the extra. The extra was the passion in their heart that remained with them, and that has been given over from generation to generation. They were the Mishkan HaEdos, and they were the Ark of Testimony, and it was within them that this extra was found. And this is what we need to tap into for ourselves, for our future generations. If you want to know how to build our Mishkan, is yes, you have to build all the necessary components, but don't forget the Hoter, don't forget the Mishkan HaEdos, don't forget the depth of Torah, and don't forget the passion, because what is more beloved to Hashem than even the Shirei Zimra is HaBocher B'Shirei Zimra, even more than the Zimra, it's the Shirei Zimra, it's what's left over. That after you say it to our Torah, you're like, I want to share even more, but not now. Oh, I wish I could sing more. I wish I could give more. That passion, the hauteur, that extra shows us that it's never enough. And that even when things seem to be enough, we have to have that emotional feeling of I wish I could do more. I want to do more. And that, we know, is that extra, which is so beloved to Hashem, that creates the special Mishkan HaEdos, the special Ark of Testimony between us and Hashem.